It is now time for Theoretical Tea and Company with Professor Janice Collins. So please, sit right back and enjoy a sip of knowledge right here on HitMix 88.9 WEIU, here for you.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Theoretical Tea and Company. We're so glad you could join us this afternoon. The title of our program today is Helping Students Get to the Other Side of Distress, Part 2, The Student's Point of View. Recently, we did a live show of Helping Students Get to the Other Side of Distress, Part 1, and we really kind of concentrated on research and studies and statistics with a little bit of personal experiences and emotions involved. Today, I felt that I wanted to do something a little bit more, get a little deeper, and I wanted the students to speak on behalf of students to students. So I think if you sit back and enjoy us with a cup of tea and a sip of knowledge, you will learn a lot from today's show. With me today, adding that sip of knowledge to the discussion, we have first John Romer, who's a broadcast major with a minor in journalism. He is a junior. Did I say that, John?
Yes, I'm a junior.
Okay, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And then next, we have Jasmine. Jasmine Goodrich is an elementary education major with a middle school level endorsement. And she has written a paper on adolescence and depression. Welcome to the show, Jasmine.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And then we also have Tracy Millsap. Millsap is a senior who also is here at Eastern Illinois University, and she is majoring in elementary education major with a middle school level endorsement as well. She also did a paper on suicide in adolescence. Welcome, Tracy.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And then next to her, we have Glenn Herring. Glenn Herring is a first-year graduate student and from College Student Affairs Program, and he is also an associate resident of housing, director in housing.
Yes, yes.
Is that right?
Yep, okay. Associate resident director of housing.
Okay, great. Thank you. Great. And then we finally have Valerie Badillo, who's a senior communication studies major with a double minor in Spanish and journalism, and also her second time joining us. If you happen to hear the first part, which you can find on HitMix 88.9 or on the website, weiu.net, or on my website at Dr. Janice Collins in the Journalism Department of Eastern, you will hear her rendition of her her input, I guess you would say, from the show from the first part. So thank you for coming back again, Valerie, and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
When we talk about getting students past the point of distress, I think I want to first talk about, let's look at the emotional aspects that are involved. And what I call that the emotion of the times, which is the emotional tone of students today. The overall feeling about life, school, jobs, love, you know, the normal stimulants or stimuli that actually brings about changes or responses from any human being. But I wanted to speak on that on many different levels of education involving students. So what do you think about the emotion of today's society?
I think it's a very stressful level out there, because the thing we've been told the past few years is our parents and teachers have been stressing that the job market is very, very difficult. And coming to school, you know that when you graduate, it's going to be really hard to find a job. And the people, when you come to school who are older than you, you like look at them and they can't find jobs, and you have family members who are getting laid off. And it's a very stressful environment when you know that if you go to school and you can even get your degree, you can do great, you can get all A's, and you still might not be able to find a job. It's very tough, and it's very hard on the mind to know you can be working for something that still might not come true.
Okay, that's a great point, John. And Jasmine, what are you thinking about the emotion from what you've learned in education, on the level of education that you're being trained in, but also from the perspective of a student as well? Do you agree with what John was saying? Do you want to add something different to that?
Oh, no, I definitely agree. I think, like, the society, like, our pressures, like, it's just anxiety and stress just to succeed, like you said. Like, we, from grade school on up, we're graded, we're evaluated. Even in college, like, it's stressful right now. Like, especially for me, I'm a person that deals with anxiety all the time. And just knowing, like, pretty soon I'm going to graduate, and that education budgets are being cut all the time, and teachers are being cut all the time, and me going into the field of education, who am I? Like, how, what makes me stand out amongst the crowd? You know, I may have gotten all A's and B's, but at the end of the day, like, it's more than just a paper and a grade and things like that. And I think, like, that thought and that, like, students, like, in elementary, and, like, I'm in the kindergarten class right now teaching for practicum, and I think my kindergartens get frustrated when they don't understand. And I feel like we just sometimes need to sit back and relax and not put that pressure on kids, not put that pressure on adults, because it's overwhelming.
Okay, Jasmine, that's a really great point that you and John brought up. And basically what you're saying is, you know, you have to worry about grades, but everyone has anxiety. And you're saying, well, take away some of this pressure. And I think to myself, and Tracy, You or Glenn can answer this question, or Valerie, or anybody. I ask myself, you know, in this capitalistic society, when we are now dealing with globalization, competitiveness is a part of the nature of this culture. Can we just simply remove the pressure to do well? Can we remove that competitiveness that we do find in the classrooms that we use in our pedagogical styles?
I personally think that it necessarily don't need to take away the pressure, but there needs to be an extent of pressure. They're not extreme pressure, but an extent of knowing that that grades are important for students. Grades are necessary, but I don't think it's everything. I think sometimes necessarily you need to think of the student and how the student's emotionally and socially developing, not always necessarily focusing on the pressure of grades.
Okay, so you're talking about not just the grades, you're talking about the emotional development as well.
Yes.
Okay, Glenn?
I would agree definitely with Tracy. I think also in society and in our classrooms, we're seeing millennial students. We're seeing students that they're facing different issues. You'll see a lot more mental issues on the rise in higher education.
Yeah, that can be difficult.
You'll see a lot of low self-efficacy in students, and just how to combat that, and what can you do to challenge a student, as well as be intentional in supporting them and guiding them through. So it's kind of a mix. You know, you have to pay attention to what their needs are.
I think it is it's like a pick your poison type of things. We have to be a competitive society because they're, you know, we're losing jobs to other countries, and we're losing, you know, we're not developing as many products as we used to be. But I feel like we're becoming tunnel vision, where we're focusing on just grades and just your performance now, where we forget to stop and look at the little things. You know, we hear people working, you know, all through the night, and they're not coming home with their families. They're not, you know, they're not paying attention to what their kids have to say and what's going on with their families. And I feel that's something we need to get back to. We need to get out of our tunnel vision and focus on a lot of little things as well.
Well, you bring up a great point, John, when you bring up the family structure. What do you think about the idea of having a classroom set up like a family structure, where it's supportive like a family, which means a professor may go to a student and say, hey, I noticed that your grades are slipping just a tad. Is there something going on? How would you feel about that? Is that stepping over the lines, or is it okay?
I feel that it's, in my personal belief, it's okay. I know some students don't agree with me. They feel like it should be just a strictly platonic, like, professor and student relationship. There shouldn't be any type of personal connection. But I feel like, you know, I'm here and I'm in class so many hours of the day. And, you know, this is basically like a full-time job for me, going to classes. It's such an important thing that it is important to have, you know, someone, a professor like you, who comes up and says, you know, is everything okay? You know, do you need a little help? Like, is everything going okay in your life? It's nice to have someone who wants to get to know you personally and make sure everything that they're teaching you, like, fits the way you learn personally.
Yes, Tracy. And then Valerie?
From the elementary standpoint, like, they're what that child sees for 8 hours a day. You're the only person that, like, smiles at them or tells them that they did a good job. It's important to be a motivator. And from a professor standpoint, I would think that it would be fine for a professor to ask me if something was going on, because that shows care. That shows that the professor would care. And I think that shows a lot.
Okay, Valerie?
I agree with John and what Tracy were saying about teachers caring. I think we might even do better in their classes if we see that a teacher is coming up to us and they actually care about our grades and not just a paycheck, and that they see us they see us as their students and they really do care about us. And I think that students might even benefit from it and do better in class. If they have a teacher actually ask them, is there something going on? Is there something I can help you with? As opposed to just drowning if you don't know what's going on in class and you're too scared to go up to your teacher and say, I don't know what's going on.
Well, let me ask you this, and go ahead, Jasmine, you wanted to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, like you mentioned, like the sense of family, and it's not even just between the professor, it's the other students in class as well. Like, they're going through the same things you're going through. They have the same assignments, they have the jobs, you know, they have the same coursework and things like that. So just knowing that other people can connect with you is sometimes just what you need. Like, I can talk to another student in my class and say, hey, like, I'm struggling with this. Are you struggling with this? And we can get through it together. I think sometimes that just helps just as much.
And going back to what Tracy said, talking about when you're in elementary school and you see the teacher for 8 hours a day, I think we all remember some teachers we have, you know, in third and fourth grade, and I had like really bad teachers and really good teachers. And it's amazing how something so long ago, like some things that happen with your teachers and how they teach you things more out of the classroom stick with you. Like the things my fourth grade teacher might have told me outside of the classroom. He saw me screwing around outside the classroom and told me, hey, stop. I think it sticks with you more. And it's almost like another parental figure in your life, a teacher like that.
Well, those are really good points, and it really is very difficult, as I said earlier, that we probably may not find the concrete answers, but I think having a dialogue about it and talking about it is a great step in the right direction. And the reason why I say that, it leads into my next thought as far as, even if the professor says, grades aren't everything, you have so much to offer the world, we all know what it's like when they see your work on paper, when they look at your resume, when they look at you. So while I may say that, it's very difficult to convince a student who may be the first student to get through college, who really needs a job, not just to help themselves, but to help their family, to say, okay, well, don't worry about it because they're going to worry about it. So let's just look at that case. Let's just say we're going to have some anxiety about grades. Okay. And let's say that we do the best that we can. Okay. Now that's in the classroom. Now let's move outside of the classroom. You have the social pressures that bring in depression and suicide. You talk about self-efficacy, low levels, because all of the other elements come into play now. We have peer pressure, alcohol, drugs, all of these elements in the environment that are going to affect you. Even if you say, I'm not going to do that, you've made a conscious decision. So it has had some type of influence on you where you can say, I'm not going to, or I am. And without demonizing any one person because no one's better than the other, what then? Once you go outside the classroom away from that professor who's so supportive, what then? What other support systems exist now?
I know definitely from a housing standpoint of view, housing has been much more intentional, especially here on Eastern's campus, with faculty fellows inviting students to tell their faculty members to have lunch and dinner with them. Also in a residence hall, just getting to know your community. Some years ago now, they shift from dorms to residence halls and learning and living communities and building that community within the residence hall. Housing is the heart of campus. It's where our students, they live. We get to see them when they're not performing well. They're in a residence hall, or they're in Greek Court, or they're in U Court. When they are doing well, they're in those elements as well. And so housing has been much more intentional about building that relationship, building that community, and trying to foster some of those needs to the students that they have.
Okay, Glenn, thank you very much. For that response, and that it really is important about the housing, because there are many levels of intervention, if you will, during your matriculation through Eastern. Before we move on, I was remiss for a moment because I wanted to bring a personal story into the element of as far as grades and being, and we're going to look at the whole failure aspect. Okay, so I do want to get back to the other pressures and that we're talking about those pressure points, but I wanted Valerie, if she would, to share her story of her friend from last year who dealt with this whole thing of failure. And it's not even about grades. It's about just feeling like you're a failure in school, in life, with your family, things along those lines. Valerie, would you share that with us, please?
My friend was 19 years old. he came back to Eastern. He flunked out and then came back. He got his grades up and came back. He got another ticket and then had to leave once again. And the night before he passed, he was telling all of his friends that, like, he didn't know what he was going to do with his life. He didn't know what was left because he was a big failure, and he felt like he was the black sheep of his family. And he was a very emotional person, and he always would react instead of thinking things through. And he jumped in front of a moving train the next morning and took his life without warning. He was fine. He was talking to people. He didn't give any signs that he was going to do that. But I think what we all thought was that he just felt like he had no way out and no way to succeed. And I feel like that's a lot of us feel like if you don't make it here in college, then you're not going to make it anywhere. You're basically done with life. You're not going to get a job. It's going to be impossible to start over. So
thank you, Valerie. And I know that Jasmine and Tracy, they've studied depression, even though it was on different levels of adolescence. Sometimes it really doesn't matter the age. There's depression and there's suicide. What can you offer? Tell us a little bit about what you studied and what some of the themes that have actually come out, I guess, in your studies when it comes to depression and suicide that will enlighten us a little bit on these topics, if you will.
Oh, I know my study was on depression, and like one common theme I found, especially for adolescents, that people just overlook it and see it as just something they're going through. Oh, it's just a phase. Like people don't take depression seriously enough, and I think that's the problem. They just think like, oh, adolescents going through hormonal changes, you know, that's the thing. Like, but we don't focus on the social emotional development, and that's the problem. Like if we had more, I guess, more education on that, if we had more people, resources, and things to talk to, and like people to talk to, then maybe that problem wouldn't be so relevant today. I feel like the depression statistics have been raised since, I think, like 1999 for adolescents, people ages 13, 24, like suicide, everything is just going up, and especially in schools, like bullying and suicides and stuff, like I've been hearing so much about them recently. And I just think that's something that maybe we need to start talking about at a younger age, and maybe we need to just help them, like be there for them. And then you said like the themes, common themes I saw was like just lack of sleep, things such as that. Like there's certain signs that we can look out for, and I think we just need to know what those signs are and just talk to people. And if we see someone looking down, ask them what's wrong, and so that just overlooking it.
And so you're basically saying that we shouldn't just discount and say, oh, they're just being teenagers. And, you know, and so therefore we don't, the signs are there, but we don't pick up on them. But at the same time, individuals, they do a really great job of camouflaging and hiding their real emotions. So that's really interesting. Tracy, what would you say about what we've been talking about?
Well, with depression is an influence and is a factor of suicide within adolescents, and suicide is among one of the leading causes of death in adolescence. And my paper was driven by an experience that my friend had when I was in middle school, and her struggle with not fitting in, with family problems, with grades and pressure, like we were talking about. And in my study, I focused on like prevention and finding prevention and starting in the schools and having teachers know risk factors and signs and symptoms of suicide, because sometimes it's just children keep everything inside. It's just so hard to even realize if what they're going through. And that's, it comes back to caring. It comes back to figuring out how as teachers we can figure out how to help them.
And Valerie, let me ask you this. Was alcohol or any substance a part of your friend's decision making?
I wasn't told whether or not he had been drinking that night, but I know that he would make dumb mistakes whenever he did drink in excess. Like he would do stuff like that when he was sad or mad and go get into fights and stuff.
Okay, so he would drink in excess?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's branch off from that. When in college, in this culture, you see a lot of that.
Yes.
You see a lot of people drinking in excess, doing drugs, even smoking. And as I said on the first show, even some of the individuals that I've watched and observed, you know, they don't really inhale. I know people don't believe that you can do that. You can't actually can. You can take the smoke in and blow it out. But they're doing it to fit in, it seems. So what about the pressures? Here you are in a college town. You know, you're away from mom and dad. Finally, you have your liberation freedom. Even if you don't drink, you might start. Even if you don't do certain things, a lot of things, you may start just to have your freedom. So what about that? How do you temper that? We talk about prevention, and Tracy and Jasmine brought up some great points. You talk about prevention. How do you do that on a college campus? And the professor can't be around you all the time. So what do you do?
It's tough. I think personally, it all comes down to how you've been brought up as a family. Majority, not in all cases, but the majority of the ways, because I've never had a cigarette in my entire life, but all of my friends smoke cigarettes. And I think it comes, I grew up and I was always taught that tobacco is bad for you and it kills you. And I've been told by many people is if you don't want to start smoking cigarettes, then don't start at all, because you won't be able to stop. So I think it comes down to your, how you've been raised and your family beliefs with whether you will, I think, partake in drugs and alcohol.
But John, let's say this, what if you don't have a family that has been the most positive influence? And you don't have that family structure, and you don't even have the extended family. And I'm not just directing this at John, but a lot of individuals, they may not come from the most positive homes. What do we do then?
Then it's a tough situation. You know, it's never going to be easy, but I think you have to teach kids. You have to show them that, hey, you know, because I remember growing up, like, I was always taught in school, like, hey, this is what tobacco will do to you. And they showed us pictures of what lungs look like after you smoke cigarettes. They showed pictures of what your, you know, gums would look like if you did chewing tobacco. And I said, that's disgusting. I don't want to do that. I don't want to partake in that at all. So I think you have to teach kids when they're young and when they're susceptible to information, and when their minds are growing, you have to teach them that these things are bad as often as you can, as much as you can, whether it's through school, whether it's through friends or elders or programs like Big Brother or Big Sister programs or family, or somehow you have to try to teach kids when they're younger that these things are bad for you.
Okay, so I'm gonna put a little side note in here. So you would think those tobacco campaigns that are out now, where they show the lungs and the gums and all of that now that people are protesting against, you think is a good idea, possibly?
Yes.
Okay. And Glenn, let me ask you something about, I wanted to ask you, Glenn, about the idea of substance abuse, and because, you know, being in housing, you see a lot. You probably deal with a lot.
Yes.
Can you expound on that a little bit for me?
For me, substance abuse is something I personally have, not me, have dealt with, but I've dealt with it with family members. And oftentimes, I think it's the lack of feeling important, the lack of that someone cares. And when you feel like no one cares, you don't care about yourself. And so it just, whatever that community or whatever that your surroundings is, there has to be something that provides that for you. There has to be somebody that's there in that environment that's doing some positive asset search, that's trying to bring the best out of you, even when you don't even know it's there. I know for me, growing up, especially on the south side of Chicago, there wasn't a lot of, I wasn't exposed to a lot of individuals that were doing positive things. But when I went to school, I got it there, or it was through friendships that I had. And it's just really, it really has opened my eyes, especially when I'm in this environment now, 5 years older, and seeing some of the same trends in urban males and urban females from areas like Chicago, from the South Side, and knowing what it is to break that idea that they have, that they can't trust anyone, and that they're not worth what they are.
And so what do you think then? Let me throw this into the pot. What do you think then about the influence and the effects of social networking? Is it good? Is it bad? Does it depend on how you use it? Who uses it? When you talk about, you don't come from a family that's positive, perhaps. You don't have the extended family. It's easy, you know, it'd be great if you had someone like a mentor, as you all have introduced to the discussion here. But sometimes it's the isolated person who can't be found. It's the student that doesn't say anything. It's the student that goes home alone, studies alone, eats alone, and they find comfort on the internet. They find other people who feel the same way that they do about a lot of different things. I'm thinking on one hand, that's a great thing. They don't even have to meet. It's a wonderful thing. On the other hand, and something that Tracy brought up, I think, already, is the fact of bullies. When you think about bullies, you have cyberbullying. So now we've left the playground. Now we're in the stratosphere. We're talking about cyberbullying. So tell me your thoughts about social networking and how it may influence someone's life in this situation.
I think as a generation or as humans, we want to belong to something. We want to belong to a group of friends or a group of people you eat with, even if it's just once a week. If you have something you want to hold on to and be involved with, and if someone who maybe, like you said, studies alone and goes home alone and eats alone, and they have a community online that they can be involved with, and it's something that it can really help someone. It's something to look forward to at the end of the day. And you mentioned cyberbullying. It's just another way that bullies found another niche in the system that they can go find people on the internet and bully them. It's a vicious cycle that can be with a bully.
Yes, Tracy, go ahead.
I think that how it goes both ways, like with social networking, it has its perks. It has, like, it gives people that sense of community. It gives people the sense of belonging. And then it also branched out into this evil, like, portion of having students cyber bully other children in their classes. And so now when they go home, they don't have an escape from the bullies either. So I just think it has two different entities of one being good and one being bad.
And I also have to point out the fact that it's not just kids bullying, right? We know the cases where adults are actually doing a lot of the bullying of kids. I mean, they're bullying kids, which is really, I never thought I'd live a day to really see that so prevalent. But at the same time, you know, when you have the bullying aspect, and we have to remember that, you know, bullies are people too. So I think to myself, who bullied them? I think to myself, who abused them? I think to myself, like Glenn said, who didn't love them? And what I'm hearing possibly is that while you can't control the internet, you cannot control everything that happens to you, you can control how you feel about yourself. So it seems like even John, when you said, this is the way I was raised, so you kind of took that with you where you went. And some people learn it later in life when they said, hey, you're special. It appears to me that perhaps attention needs to be paid to the individual to heighten their self-esteem, self-confidence. What do you think about that theory, that thought?
I agree. That's what I was saying. Like, yes, I think Jasmine. That in the classroom, like even at a young age, we need to talk about being special, being different, how each of us are unique and how we need to embrace those differences. Because as we grow up, like you start to wonder, like, oh, I'm different, like this makes me weird and things like that. But I think if we learn to embrace our differences, then we wouldn't have this problem with bullying. Because like you said, a lot of bullying, like I watched some CNN special and they were saying like most people who are getting bullied or bullies themselves, like everyone at some point in their life mm-hmm. is a bully. And I think that if we embrace our differences and like not learn to not judge other people as much, and if we accept ourselves, then we can be a lot more accepting of other people.
Okay, thank you, Jasmine. Valerie?
Going off of what you said, Dr. Collins, about self-esteem, I think I had said this on the previous show that it's very important when you're here and you feel alone to really try to join things and surround yourself with a group of people and find that group of friends that cares about you and find someone that you can talk to when you feel alone or when you feel mad or sad about something, because you need someone to talk to, someone like face to face to say, hey, it's okay, I'm here for you. And it's, I think especially in college, it's really important to find just that close group. And if you have a group of friends and don't care about your needs or your feelings, then they're not really your friends.
Okay, thank you. Tracy, did you want to say something? Okay, I saw you kind of motion there, but we'll take just a moment just to say, if you're just tuning in with us at this moment, you're listening to Theoretical Tea and Company, and the title of our program today is Helping Students Get to the Other Side of Distress, Part 2, The Student's Point of View. My guest today, offering a sip of knowledge to this conversation, is Valerie Berdiel of Eastern Illinois University, Glenn Herring, John Romer, Jasmine Goodrich, and Tracy Millsap. Jasmine and Tracy come from the elementary education area. They have they're majoring in elementary education with a middle school endorsement. Did I say that? Okay. I always do that, right? And they both have written interesting papers, one on depression and one on suicide. And John Romer is a broadcast major with a minor in journalism who is a junior here at Eastern Illinois University. And Glenn Herring is a first-year graduate student in the College Student Affairs, from the College Student Affairs Program, and associate resident director in housing. All right, great. So thanks for tuning in today, everyone. So we've been talking about some of the emotional aspects. We've been talking about the whole idea of bullying and how it's just, you know, there are students of all ages who are committing suicide for many different reasons, because they have a sexual orientation that they don't think they will be loved. And so they're told they won't be loved, or, and then as young as 8 years old, you know, knowing that at a young age and thinking that they're different. Forget if it's not even bringing in the sexual aspect, it's just thinking and feeling that you're different and that you don't belong. And that's the whole theory of in-group and out-group theory that we know within sociology and psychology. So that's just human. We're talking about a human level. And while we're talking about the individual, what's apparent in your discussion is that it's hard to do it alone. It's hard to gain self-esteem by yourself in your room. So you have to interact with people. I think that's why it's so important to pick the right people that you interact with. I very seldom hear this element mentioned in the conversations of bullying, emotional distress, suicide, sometimes suicide, alcohol, cigarettes, all these elements that we've been talking about, and some we haven't even mentioned. Very few of them talk about the religious aspect that's involved in a college student's, elementary student's, junior high school, whatever the case may be. When you hear these discussions, when you see online or in the media, where you all are actually growing up in a culture that I didn't grow up in, women did not fight each other. We didn't beat each other up. But people are becoming famous by doing that. They're getting paid for doing that in a recession. Well, some say we're in a recession. I put that in quotes. But here we are. I got to make money somehow. So, okay, we're going to set this person up. We're going to record it, and then we're going to shoot it on the YouTube. And even if I don't get any money, I'm famous. So then again, you talk about love, self-love. I want to be famous. I want someone to love me and notice me. Even if that requires me beating someone up who doesn't deserve it. I mean, I don't know who deserves it, but we're going to say that, for instance. For a moment, I want to talk about the religious aspect. And the reason why I bring this up, Dr. Andrew Robert Robinson, who is the pastor at ACTS here at Eastern Illinois University, recently he told me, I believe it was 92%. I may have the number wrong, but I know it was over 80% of students surveyed do not bring their religious practices with them to college. They may have been brought up that way in school, I mean at home. But what do you think about the issue of religion? I'm not an advocate or, you know, I'm not against it. I'm just saying about just the discussion of religion. Any thoughts about that? No one seems to want to take the lead here. I mean, you don't have to say what your religion is, but why do you think religion is not discussed when we talk about bullying, when we talk about, I mean, you watch CNN, you watch any of, I don't see religion being discussed. I don't see anyone asking the questions of, oh, this is what's going on in their religious upbringing, or, I don't know, John, what do you think?
I feel like when kids go to school, the majority of them try to find themselves. And when they come to school, they're trying to, maybe they've been brought up in church, but most of the time you go to church because your parents take you to church when you're little, and you go to their church because that's the church they go to. And I feel like a lot of kids, when they come to school, they want to find themselves, and they have that freedom for the first time to say, I don't have to wake up early on a Sunday to go to church. I can sleep in and then wake up and watch football all day. Like they have that freedom. And I think a lot of kids lose their religion because they like being able to try to find themselves and find ways to make themselves happy.
Okay. Anybody else want to take this this hot ball here? Glenn?
I think that also, I definitely agree with you, John. Students get here and they want to find themselves. They want to explore in a free environment. Also, when you reach a certain age, you're challenged. You want to challenge everything that you know and everything that you've come from.
That would be normal, right?
Yes, that's a normal thing, I think. But whether or not if you continue to practice, it depends on if your family was doing it out of ritual or if it was just something that was traditional. You know, if you just if it was something that you just did, you know, every Sunday and you just participated in it, then if you're just a participant in it, then that's a different aspect. If you are actually going for yourself to get something from it, you'll carry that with you. Mm-hmm. When they get here, they lose that, or they try to explore and develop and create a new person. That's what this environment, I think, lends itself to, that's open to diversity, where you experience a lot of different things at the same time in a new environment.
Okay. What I like to do, these are really, really great points, and we're past the half hour of our show. So we're coming up on the end of when we're going to try to, I want to move to the area of when you all spoke about prevention. I want to move to the area now that we've discussed some of these ideas. One by one, kind of think about what you feel needs to be done to move past the moment of distress. In other words, think of the student who's actually listening to the show, who has been on both sides, you know, anxiety about grades. They don't have to be suicidal. They could just have anxiety about grades, suicidal, depressed, problems at home, whatever the case may be. In a school environment, on whatever level, what do you feel, either from your research, your studies, your personal experience, your educational experience, do you feel is needed to help students move past the point of distress to a point of productivity emotionally? Anybody can start. Go ahead, Jasmine.
I would say just find that support system, whether or not it's a professor, whether or not it's friends, whether or not it's your family. Like, I think everyone needs something to hold them up sometimes. And sometimes it's hard to find. And like, a lot of times, I think we all go through those times when you just feel alone. But I think that there's never a time when we're alone. Like, there's always someone out there, I feel like. And if it's not, like, maybe you need to branch out on the internet. Like, we talked about social networking, maybe, like, stuff like that. But I think it's important for everyone to find some sort of support systems, because we're all going to feel emotional. We're all going to go through things. You know, it's part of life. We're going to have our ups and our downs. But I think we all need something to just hold us up sometimes.
Okay, thank you, Jasmine. And Valerie, why don't you chime in? And Tracy, I see you want to say something. Valerie, go ahead.
I agree with Jasmine. I definitely think we do need a support system. And I also think it's important to sometimes just relax and take a break and take a step back and breathe, because I know school can be overwhelming. And we think too much of the future, but sometimes we just need to live now in the moment and just relax and just take a step back and just realize that we still are kids, and that we're still growing up and learning, and that it's okay to make mistakes, and that if you do get a D in that class or if you feel like you're failing, just to try again, and you always get a second chance, and to not feel like there is no other way out.
That's right. You know, and I'm glad you really touched on the failure aspect as well, because we have to remember all of these great icons, from Einstein to Bill Gates to Steve Jobs. I mean, it goes on and on of people who said, listen, I'm not a failure. I may be different. I may do something differently. I'm not a failure. So, Valerie, like you're saying, what Jasmine and, you know, you all are saying, just keep trying. Find your support group. Keep trying. Get up. You're not a failure. Okay, let's keep moving on that. Tracy?
I agree with what Jasmine and Valerie are saying. I also think that it's finding a trustworthy person. It's finding someone that they can confide in if they do have an issue. It's also developing, it's also growing as a person.
That's a great point. You're just going to have to grow. Sometimes they're called growing pains. I still go through them every now and then, and it never goes away. You still have growing pains. If you're lucky, you're still going to grow. Go ahead, Tracy. That's a great point.
With growing, I think that it's also necessary to have someone there that when to ask questions to, just have someone basically there that you can trust. You can tell anything that you feel, or that even with anxiety, it's easy to talk it out. You need to talk with other people. You need to talk with everyone. And I just think, as from a teacher's stand or soon to be teacher's standpoint, that I want to be a person that they can confide in. And
okay, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Tracy, Glenn, and then John, and then I'm going to ask you the same question. I'm glad you all are concentrating on student, because I want you to talk to that student. I want you to talk to that student right now, and then we're going to flip it a little bit. But Glenn, go ahead, and then John, give me your assessment.
Definitely, for me being a first generation student on a college campus for the first time, with little direction, not knowing where to go and not knowing what the road looks like, just getting out there and finding that one person that's going to change your your situation. Mm-hmm. All you're looking for is that one yes. You know, coming from a musical background, a musical standpoint of view, I've auditioned for numerous hundreds of plays and all types of things, and all I'm looking for is that one director that's something special in me.
That's wonderful.
And yeah, and to see that light in you, you have it. You hear, you've made it this far. You know, don't give up.
Okay, that's really great. Okay, thanks, Glenn. And John?
I feel like at the end of the day, if you're feeling sad or depressed, I feel like you have to just pick yourself off up and dust yourself off and get out there and put yourself out there. When I first came here as a freshman, the first 2 weeks I hated it here. I wanted to go home. I wanted to go back to home. I missed all my friends. I was the only one from my graduating class that went out and went away, far away to school. And I hated it. And all my friends that were here, all the people I just met were, you know, joining fraternities or joining groups. And I was sitting in my room one night and I thought to myself, you know, what's the worst that can happen if I went and just tried these groups, just went out and met people? And I joined a fraternity, and it's been the best decision I've ever made. You know, you go out and you just got to put yourself out there. And if you get a D on a test, you know, I've gotten, you know, plenty of D's and F's. It happens to the best of us. You got to just say, well, it happened. You know, I spilled the milk. Something happened. You got to, you know, stop and smell the flowers on the way home. You know, you have to just pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and go and enjoy the little things.
Okay, that's great. Great, great, great. Positive affirmation here. We're going to talk about a couple of things at the end of the show. We only have about 7 minutes left, but we're going to talk about an event that's going on that individuals might want to attend, and also a program that you might be interested in. So let's flip it now. We talked to the student. Now, I want you to think about this. I want you to think about, as students, because you're still students, what would you tell the professor? What would you tell the coach? What will you tell these people, these individuals that see these students at least twice, three times a week? We have a lot of influence. We can have a lot of influence. Okay. So now I want your target audience, if you will, to be the professor. What would you tell the professor on behalf of the students, what they need to know and keep in mind? And again, anyone can start, and just be really candid and really honest, because you never know what professor really, you know, needs to hear this. Because in any class, my theory is, you know, it's not a type of draconian type of atmosphere where the professor comes in and knows everything. The learning environment is reciprocal. And so if I, you know, I've been awarded Teaching of Excellence Awards at two universities, and I really truly believe that it's because I listen to my students and they directly talk to me about what they like about the class, what they don't like about the class, what they're getting at. Now, that doesn't mean I have to change, but I'm listening to what they're saying, because it's their education. Now, doesn't mean I don't make mistakes. I do. But again, I don't believe in failure like you're saying. I just try again better the next semester. We're just like you. We have anxiety too. We have stress. We have anxiety. We hope we're doing a great job. Oh God, what are they going to say in my evaluation? You know, we have tenure to worry about, things along those lines. So this is your opportunity to really speak directly to the professor and say, you know what, this is what I want you to keep in mind when you're dealing with students. Go ahead, Jasmine.
I think it's just important for the professors to let their students know that they care about them. And like, my favorite professors have been like the ones on the first days that said, like, I'm not out to get you, I'm here to help you. And like, I know that they're here to help me grow, like as individual, as a student, as a future educator, like, you know, whatever department you're in. I think it's just important to know that they're not out here to get us. They're not here to fail you in class. They're here to help you grow. And I think that's what professors are going to do, like show that they care. Like, you can be stern, you can be hard, you know, you can give assignments and stuff like that. Like, that's not what matters. What matters is that you care about my education just as much as I do.
And would that caring then mean that they're showing that not only, so automatically you're setting the stage that we're in it together as a team?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jasmine. Valerie?
I agree with what Jasmine said. And I also think that professors need to remember that they were in our shoes at one point. I think sometimes they are harsh and don't realize that they're being so harsh because they're already at where they want to be and they're just wanting us to be where we want to be, but sometimes they get frustrated or upset when students look like they're being lazy, but sometimes it's just that they don't understand what's going on and they're too scared to approach the teacher. So I think it's really important for professors to be approachable and not be intimidating and to really be a human to the students and not someone who's above them and is too big to even talk to.
Okay, so it's the human interest and the human interest of connection and attachment. Thank you, Valerie. John?
Yeah, I agree with Valerie. You really have to realize that, you know, kids and students, you know, we're humans, you know, we're gonna want to feel like we belong. And I nothing makes me happier, it's weird, but when I go into a class and the professor like remembers my name or recognizes me,
really,
or
yeah,
sees me outside of the campus, say, oh, hey, John, how's it going? Like, it's just, it's nice to say, oh, wow, they actually know me. They're not just, you know, blankly staring at me while giving me a lecture. You know, get to know your kids. You know, today I had a conversation with the professor for 5 minutes about his vacation. He's going to New Orleans this weekend. And it's just nice to get to know, it breaks down the barrier. So when I need help in a class, I can go and I'm not scared to go up and talk to him, say, hey, I'm struggling, you know, what can you do to help me? What can I do?
Okay, great. Thank you. Glenn?
I believe that the greatest teacher can be measured by their worst student. What are you pouring into that student that might be struggling, that might be up all night working hard to get that C, but just don't have the skills quite yet, or the refinement or the grooming as the A students that might do it in a couple of hours?
Okay.
What are you pouring into that student? What is that relationship like? How intentional are you with the students that are underperforming? Do you understand the cultural differences of the classroom, the dynamics of the classroom?
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. And Tracy?
Along with what Glenn was saying, for a professor, just maybe to take a step back and maybe look at, oh, well, what's going on in his or her life that she or he isn't totally diving into the subject or not understanding the content, or just to realize that we're human. Like, things go on in our lives that sometimes take a precedent over school, or sometimes family issues. Just to realize that we're humans too, and we have issues to deal with.
Okay. I like that whole idea, and it seems so interesting to hear it verbalized, in that we're human too, that students really feel that professors look at them like they're not human and treat them like they're not human, but I know it does exist. And for students also to realize that the professor is human and that they make mistakes as well, and it's okay to have that discussion, that open discussion. I have to say, when you all touched on the caring aspect, you know, teaching is really, for me, a work of passion. It is something I knew I always wanted to do because I always wanted someone to do great things. I believe in people. I like people. And when I walk into a classroom, I really like my students. I think they're phenomenal because I have them do these bios at the very beginning, just between me and them. And I share a little bit of that with the class if they say it's okay. The first thing I say, for your homework assignment, I want you to tell me a little bit about yourself. Just one page. And when I find out all the wonderful things they've done in high school, all the wonderful things they did the year before, but they're telling me they're actually connecting with me on a human level. So if they're afraid of speaking out in class, but they want me to push them, they'll put that in the letter to me. And so I'll make them sit at the front of the classroom. without saying anything to anybody else, but I'm winking at them knowing that that's what they want to do. It's that whole aspect of, if you don't feel comfortable in saying certain things, a lot of professors can ask them just to write a bio and say, tell me a little bit about yourself, and we can do it on those lines. So I think what you're saying all in general is just having that human contact. And that's really wonderful to hear, and the fact that you all are growing up in the technological booming age of social networking, that you actually want the human connection. And you think that's really important. I think people forget, professors forget, that students actually want that. And I think it's really, really important, because you are human, as we all are, and you have all of the insecurities that a lot of people have. So we actually have more in common, despite our race, despite our gender, whatever the case may be. We have more in common than we don't. And so maybe we can find something along those lines. So on that note, I want to say thank you so very much to offering the student perspective and the student voice to a discussion that would not exist and should not exist without your voices, period. I'm so pleased and so honored and privileged that you all were able to come and to join in on this discussion for Theoretical Tea and Company. So audience, I'd like to thank personally and professionally Valerie Badillo. That's B-A-D-I-L-L-O. She's a positive student. You can always email her to get positive affirmation. Glenn Herring, a first-year graduate student, H-E-R-R-I-N-G. John Romer, a junior broadcast major, R-O-E-M-E-R. Jasmine Goodrich, elementary education major with a middle-level endorsement. That's Goodrich, just like the Goodrich tires. And Tracy Millsap, also a senior in elementary education major with a middle school level endorsement. Very wonderful discussion. Very positive affirmation. Thank you so much for joining us today on Theoretical Tea and Company. And as usual, in ending this, I have two announcements to make that you would like to be interested in. One is Dr. Pearson is holding a panel. And you'll probably see some of the students here that are here today there, called Bridging Voices in Our Community, the Bullying Project. That's going to take place in Buzzard Hall Auditorium Tuesday, December 6th at 7 p.m. So you've had your turkey. You're coming back from Thanksgiving. It'd be a great event to go to. The other program is called Active Centralized Empowerment that I started this year, where you move from the margins of depression, anxiety, low self-esteem. You move from the margins to the core, because you're actively moving from the margins to the core and centralizing your empowerment. If you'd like to be involved, it involves exercise, studying, study hall, but positive affirmation. Just shoot me an email on my website, or shoot me an email here at Easter. In closing, as usual, I'd like to dedicate this show to someone and some people. I'd like to dedicate the show to the students who feel lost and can't seem to find their way out. And we hope that this program, in both parts, part one and two of Theoretical Tea and Company, has offered you all some options to either talk to someone, anyone, a teacher, a friend, a counselor, your parents, siblings, someone on the internet, out in the stratosphere, or even higher if it's a higher power. And may you take one step at a time towards empowering yourselves by speaking up, speaking out, and being honest about what you need. Have a great day. Thanks for joining in to Theoretical Tea and Company.
Thank you for tuning in to Theoretical Tea and Company. Please join us next time for another sip of knowledge, right here on HitMix 88.9 WEIU, here for you.